of the Nerd Watch. I, of course, am G Money. I am joined by the one and only Professor Barry, the one and only man who makes this show legitimate.
You're legit, man. You got the skills. You have a radio background. I don't have a radio background.
Yeah, but you know, you're a writer.
But people hear you. You're like on the air. You do commercials. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's all right, I guess. You know,
put us together. We're the ultimate crime fighting team.
That is true. That is true. I'm the voice, and you're the
brain.
Heart and the wit of the show. Awesome. Anyway, it's just you and I today. Format is missing. He's had it's graduation season here on the lovely island of Maui, and Format has got his family in town, so he's missing out on this, and that's fine because it's hard to miss out on family when they don't live, a couple miles away. So he's spending time with his family, so good for him. Anyway, we are here at the fantastic Maui Comics and Collectibles. And we just want to tell you guys there is some amazing things happening down here. Matter of fact, if you're listening to this, and I'm assuming because it posts tomorrow, just in case, so I'll make it as live as possible or as make it as immediate as possible. If you live on this island and you happen to be listening to the show on Wednesday, okay, you need to come down to Maui Comics and Collectibles at what address, sir?
333 Akaku.
That's right. It is new Comic Book Wednesday every Wednesday here at Maui Comics and Collectibles. There are new comics to be picked up, swiped, as it were, swiped up to add to your collection. Some beautiful work has been coming in, beautiful covers, wonderful stories, and you gotta check them out down here, Maui Comics and Collectibles. And when you come down to Maui Comics and Collectibles, if you live on the lovely island of Maui, you gotta come and check out not just the comics, but they also have got a lot of retro figures, retro games. They even hold contests for that stuff here as well. And so Comic Book Wednesday is the day to come down and get the best of the best of the new comics. If you're living here on Maui. So come and check it out. It's our good friends at Maui Comics and Collectibles. So, of course, a big thank you to Alika for providing such a wonderful space for the show. We certainly do appreciate it. And he has been a wonderful, I'm just going to call him, he's a wonderful sponsor for the show because he provides for us. And we definitely want to, in turn, give back to him for sure. So come on down. Visit the comic book store. You will not be disappointed. We don't have a lot of these things here. It's nice that we have one to come to and enjoy, for sure. So check it out. My Comics and Collectibles, 333.
Akaku.
Ooh, very good. Ooh, you sung that. Very good, Professor Barry. All right, so listen.
Now that we have a sponsor, man, we got to step up our game a little bit.
We're like a legitimate commercial and stuff. It's awesome. Anyway, Professor Barry, how was your week so far?
It's good. Just busy. I'm going to be at the Maui Film Festival for the rest of the week.
Who's being honored?
This year it's Colin Farrell and Laura Dern. Those are the big ones. And then the young whippersnappers are given the Rising Star Award. It's Scott Eastwood, the son of the one, the only Clint Eastwood. And Teresa Palmer, who is starring in the Point Break remake.
Oh, that miserable trailer of a movie that we saw
the other week.
Yeah. All right. So that's what you'll be going to be doing this week, right? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. See any movies lately?
I have.
Fantastic. So that was what your week has been so far. You haven't directed any plays or
taught
any kids or anything, have you?
Coming up. Right now.
Oh, coming up. Okay, good, good. Well, as for me, listen, Professor Barry, I'm going to tell them what's going on. I'm going to be talking through you more than to you.
Okay.
I have
What else is new?
I have been busy working on reviews, which you have so kindly edited.
We should say that your reviews of The Avengers 2, Pitch Perfect 2, and Mad Max are up now on the Nerdwatch.
But believe so. I have not put them up yet.
Oh.
So let's just... By the time this airs, let's just put it that way. Yeah. Very good. Let's put it that way. In the near future, for us, but in your present, it should be up. And if it isn't, don't worry, they'll be going up. I did three of those, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing. I really enjoyed doing Mad Max. I really enjoyed doing Avengers, and I actually really like doing Pitch Perfect too. I've noticed that since I started writing these things, This is the part that I talk to you.
I'm engaged now.
Okay, good. Be engaged. Okay, thank you. I notice that when I write these things now, I've done, I don't know, ever since last year, I'd say I've done a good 15, 20 of them. But, maybe less than that. But whatever the case may be. I've noticed that I always felt in the beginning that I had to constantly name everybody and everything in the movie. And I had to make sure that it almost felt I had to expound upon the movie itself in the review. And I noticed that this time around, I didn't have to do that. I do, I find it necessary to give the story, now I feel it necessary to do the setup. And then I let it take off from there. I don't know if that is an appropriate way to do a review for a movie, but I always do the setup. It seems like I always do setup, and then I just kind of give my opinion. I give them a little overview of the setup, and then I move on. But I've found it more effective. I don't have to name everyone in the film or recognize everyone. I noticed that this time around my reviews were a tad shorter. Normally my reviews are a little longer. So I don't know. Are these being done all right? You are the professional in this case. So as far as your reaction, not so much a review of the review, but of your reaction, is that the way to do it? I don't know. I know if I sound insecure, it's because I kind of am.
You're giving me all this power right now that I could review your reviews.
You could. Every time you send them back to me, you always sound like my teacher, which is so...
Oh, I just want to give you constructive criticism, let you know what works. Your Mad Max review worked beautifully because I think even people who saw the film need some explaining of the plot. Because it is kind of tricky to figure out exactly, okay, how does Max fit in with this? Right. Who exactly was it that was kidnapping him? Why exactly did they need his blood? Who is Nux? So I found your review very helpful in that way. Right. In addition to others, I think that was my favorite of the reviews you've written recently. All that to say, it's different for every film. I don't think you need to go through every single plot point of Pitch Perfect 2, and you didn't need to.
Right.
You don't need to go through every single character arc of Avengers. For one thing, most of the readers probably know, and two, who wants to read that meanwhile Scarlet Witch is da da da. I think it's different for every film.
Sure.
And you could open it up with a personal insight. I've always loved that kind of thing more so than just going right into the plot. But really, I mean, it's an ongoing thing, and you write like you talk, and you're definitely trying to converse with your reader.
Yeah.
So I think your style's great. I think it's just going to get better.
I've noticed that too. I never noticed that until you mentioned it to me. I do write as if I am speaking.
Well, that's why when I edit it, I'm usually adding a lot of commas, because you write like you talk, and there's not a lot of commas. You have these, you know, mouthful.
Drone.
Yes, no, not drone. You have kind of like what I'm doing right now. Sentences that don't necessarily have a comma or an ellipsis. They kind of keep going, and either people listen or they're like,
right.
Commas and periods are very important for both of us.
for both the reader and the writer.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, that's good, because I am, you know, when I was sitting there writing, I don't need to go plot point after plot point, but I'm thinking to myself, you know, I can make these a lot shorter. Well, let me give you an example.
Yep.
Like these, I don't even know why I'm telling everybody here at the Nerd Watch this, or anybody that listens to the show, but I'm going to just, it's our show, so I figured I'd just give you my outlet. It's like my Interstellar review that I did. I really enjoyed it, but I felt like at the very end of that, go back and read it. It's on Maui Watch. It's there, MauiWatch.com. You can look for my review of Interstellar. My name's all over it. You can check it out. But at the very end of that, I felt like I became real blowhardy. You know, at the very end of, you know, I'm gonna try and look.
You
want to
pull it up?
Yeah, let me pull it up. Just because I was doing the Interstellar review.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this is a movie that I watched, and I felt like you almost feel dumber for having watched such a smarter movie than you are at some point. You know, something like that.
Sure.
And you kind of feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I felt. And so I feel like I have to at least try and meet the expectation of the smart film that it was.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at it, this is how I'm pulling it up right now on my watch.
Okay.
I ended it with some interesting interestingly good at the time.
Okay. All right.
At the time, I thought it was interestingly good that I had said what I had said. And where is that?
And you're regretting that now?
Now I'm kind of regretting it. And let me just see if I can.
Has anybody said anything?
No one has said anything.
So it's just, this is just eating away at you.
It's right. It's been eating away at me. All right, here it is. I found it. All right, here it is. Here it is. Here it is. All right. So at the end of this long review that I wrote for Interstellar, I wrote, and this is where I became a blowhard. All right, here we go. Let me just read it to you. At the end of my Interstellar review, you can read the whole thing at mommywatch.com. The best sci-fi is never about making the impossible possible, but about looking inward to find what is possible, which in turn serves mankind with unlimited possibilities. These possibilities continue on as the dreams of those willing to look inward for answers and to make them a reality. This is at the heart of Interstellar, a film that dares to dream of a better mankind, not a better place to inhabit. Our problems may not require a trip to other worlds, but a journey into the depths of the human heart. That is such a blowhardy paragraph. I freaking hate it.
Terrific.
I sound like such an idiot. Like a jerk off.
You sound like Carl Sagan. It's a great. That's
no,
great, man.
I hate
that's beautiful,
it.
Man.
I freaking hate it.
I love that. It's about science fiction being looking inward. I agree. That's great.
I don't know. I felt after when at the time I was like, man, this is brilliant. This is awesome. This is brilliant. Then I went back and read it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, man, I sound like such a jerk. Like an, I don't know. Anyway, listen, I'm probably my own worst critic.
No, I think it's great. I think it's great. You know, anyway. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, I just said you either rise or fall to the level of the film, and I think you're trying to make a big statement about what science fiction is, and
right.
I think you're making the point that this is a prime example of what science fiction should do as opposed to what it typically does.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, suffice to say, I've got three more reviews that I don't pontificate on as much, so enjoy them. All of this, the last 10 minutes of this, all this is to tell you is that I am at the point of where I think now I have honed a good outline for these reviews, because I noticed that when I read your reviews, I get depressed. And I mean that as in, excuse me, sorry.
Please explain yourself.
When I read your reviews, it depresses me because when I read yours, they're so good that it makes, I almost feel like I have to compete with how good you write your reviews.
No, but
it's the internal guy, it's the internal competition, you know what I'm saying? That thing where it's like, man, I got to live up to this, I've got to live up to this review. I think I should be able to write as good. You know what I'm saying? So it's the internal thing. It's not you, it's me. I think
I've heard that said to me a few times in my life. Never about my movie reviews, but
so don't get me wrong, your reviews are fantastic, and that is what really that's what really motivates me to do better reviews. So that's why, like I said, it depresses me that I can't be as succinct and precise as you on those things. So I become a little bit not discouraged.
Depressed.
Well, that and ticked.
Well, don't read them. Seriously, don't. Here's what I honestly do.
What?
I don't read anybody's reviews until I write my own. Not only because I don't want to get spoiled, but I don't want, you know, to use this phrase. I don't want the well to be poisoned. I don't want to be using anybody else's thoughts. I don't want anybody else's influence but my own when I write. Mm-hmm. And I usually wait until like, for example, like my review of Aloha. I didn't read anybody else's review of it until I saw it myself. And I'm glad because everyone else is so overwhelmingly negative. I think maybe that would have influenced me.
Right.
Maybe not, but still, like I don't read anybody's reviews until I write my own because I want exactly what my experience is to come across. Because, you know, one of the things about film criticism that you understand is that it's not just personal opinion. We're reporters. We're reporting about how this movie made us feel. And, you know, we got to be honest about it. So you know, it should be as much as from our point of view as it is, you know, our recreating what the experience of what the right. film is like. And frankly, I think that is so much more important than going over every plot point. I say only talk about the actors you want to talk about. Only talk about the aspect of the story that's important. And when it comes to, from my reviews, I don't talk about plot because I want people to have a fresh experience. I would rather people discover the movie on their own as opposed to from anything that I write.
And that's why I've noticed that I do setup. And yeah. I don't. That's all I do now.
That's the way to do it, yeah.
So,
and there's so much that happens in Mad Max. The fact that you set it up the way you did was great because it explained why Max is even in this movie in the first place. Because initially he is kind of a, what's the word?
I mean, nomad.
Like, well, he's kind of like a, he's almost like a supporting character in his own movie. You know,
yeah.
He is. I mean,
no,
you know,
sure.
Initially it's like, you know, why do we even need him in this movie? He really, you know, and we love Max, we know Max, but if you're just seeing the film cold without seeing the other films, it's kind of the question of why is this guy's name above the title?
Right.
He has a mask over his head. He's being drained of his blood. He's been made into a human hood ornament. What is the point? You know,
why is the hero being held hostage for the first 40 minutes of the movie?
And he has the mask on for what, an hour maybe?
Almost.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's Furiosa's movie for almost the whole way. I mean, Max is a participant, but he's not necessarily the one calling the shots in this
one. Not pulling the movie forward or pushing it forward.
And I find that refreshing.
I think we both did too.
But all I have to say, I mean, that's why I think the way you described, because that was one of the, I think, you know, to put it this way, I think that was one of the wordiest plot synopsises you had in a while, but I thought it was really essential because you're making the reader understand why it's really Charlize Theron's movie.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so. Well, I appreciate that. I wasn't losing confidence in myself.
As you should. No.
But I was losing confidence in the words that I was putting on paper.
Your Interstellar review is good. No, you brought up a really good example.
Yeah, so. I thought that was cool.
You should be proud of that, man.
I still think it's blowhardy. But anyway.
Blowhardy is good.
Okay.
It can be good.
Okay. All right, so other than that, after writing those reviews, which are going to be up shortly on the Nerdwatch and then on MommyWatch.com, Nerdwatch, Facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. I also have been playing, this is where I talk through you. I just want to make sure.
I'll listen.
Just listen. This is where I have been, just for you gamers out there, I have been playing a ton of The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. I'm attempting to. There are only so many hours in a day. You know, when you're a kid, you realize, man, I wish these days were shorter. And then when you get older, it's like, man, where the heck does the time go? And I feel like I can't stay up till 4 o'clock every freaking day because I work. So, of course, I'm up as much as I can. A lot of people have been putting in like 48 hours in there because you can tell, you can read out how long you've been playing. I've been playing for approximately 16 hours now, I think, or 17 hours of game time. And I have barely touched the surface of this game. That's what I've been trying to do so I can give you an honest review of how I am enjoying this game. Right now, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I don't think I'm ever going to have a review for this game until I'd say October of this year, maybe, because it's so big. So, anyway, if you are looking for something to play while you're waiting for Arkham Knight and or Elder Scrolls Online, I would say The Witcher 3 is the way to go. So, that's all I want to spend on that. Pick it up. It's the stories are phenomenal so far. The actual game has some bugs here and there. It's not something that is, it's not remotely game-breaking, as it were, but they are, some of them are an annoyance, but they are being fixed as they go along, which is good. We already got our first patch. Next patch is incoming next week, which is very good. So, if you're looking for something to play, and don't let it intimidate you, you gotta check it out, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Check it out. Anyway, moving on. Now, back to talking to you. Professor Barry. So, you and I, all this, 20 minutes before we talk about what we did tonight, we made an attempt at watching the movie Entourage tonight as the premiere. We were going to actually do this later. We made an attempt to watch Entourage, the film starring Adrian Grenier and
Jeremy Piven.
And it's about, I guess you told me because I have not watched a single episode of Entourage, but you have.
Yeah.
Could you explain what it is exactly?
I think the easiest way is that it's a fictionalized version of what Mark Wahlberg went through when he first became an actor, when he first had opportunities that were open up for him, and he had, you know, his old crew hanging out with him, and these guys are so colorful, in some cases self-destructive, but they add so much color and flavor to his life, as well as kind of bringing, you know, keeping, they're helping him, like, you know, be real to himself and, you know, and honest with some of the choices he makes. He's kind of has this surrogate family with him all the time, these brothers that he's constantly with.
Right.
So it's about that, and it's also about how his agent, Ari Gold, played by the wonderful Jeremy Piven, is trying to bring him to that next A-list level of stardom.
Wow. So Entourage had quite a following a while ago. It's been off the air of HBO in a long time, for quite some time now, I think. Yep. Why? We made an attempt to see it tonight. Unfortunately, what happened was...
We won't name the theater.
We won't name the theater, no. But there was an unfortunate episode with the actual theater it was playing in. So unfortunately for us, we were unable to see Entourage tonight. But with that being said, maybe it was a sign. That's what I'm thinking, that it might have been a sign. So all I know is that this film has been touted as, oh, you don't have to watch the series to get it. Oh, you don't have to watch the series to get it. So I was very interested in seeing it. And plus, it was on a Tuesday night, and very rarely do we ever get movies on a Tuesday night. So I was like, eh, well, let's give it a shot. There's actually a little bit of buzz on this film.
Yep.
What's your take? Do you think that this is going to be anything this summer?
I'm hopeful, but I got burned last year by the Veronica Mars movie, which I thought, on the one hand, I wasn't a big fan of the show. I saw the show, I liked the show, but I wasn't a huge fan of it, and I can't say that I was, you know, over the moon that they actually made the movie. But I thought that the Veronica Mars movie, it didn't even really capture what made the show special, and it wasn't one of these movies where you watch and go, oh man, I can't wait to see the show. Because I actually saw Serenity first, and then I went back and watched Firefly. Because, I was one of those guys. I missed Firefly when I was on, but I liked Serenity so much. I thought, there's something to this. And sure enough, the series is fantastic. The movie it's a nice bookmark to it, but really, excuse me, footnote. But, you know, I mean, Firefly is the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
And Veronica Mars, I mean, I really thought, you know, they really missed it.
Now, this has quite a cult following, too.
Veronica Mars deserves its cult following, but I think the movie, it's strictly for the fans, but I feel like there wasn't enough there to lure people in who weren't already fans. And I think these movies should have that quality. I think the X-Files movie had that. I think the Star Trek movies have that. You got to stand on your own. It can't be just about what came before.
Right.
I think these movies should do that. I'm hopeful that Entourage will be good. Apparently, it's got like more cameo appearances than any movie this year. There's like 50 celebrities who pop up playing themselves. But, I mean, it's a busy summer. If the movie isn't a funny standalone film, it's not going to last. This really isn't a good time for cult movies.
Well, this is the perfect time to do it right before next week, which is Jurassic World.
Yep.
So this is the time to release your movies. We're getting Entourage this week, Spy, and Insidious Chapter 3 this week as well. So, Professor Barry, we'll try it again sometime. Don't know when. maybe after the show. Who knows? Maybe. We'll put in a call. We'll see. But other than that, Professor Barry, you got to see two films last week. One, of course, was the number one movie at the box office last weekend, and then the other one was undeservedly drawing a lot of ire and controversy, and that, of course, was Aloha. So before we get to San Andreas, which I want to talk about, I think we should talk a little bit about Aloha, just because it is out. It was filmed out here in Hawaii, and it has a lot of characters that are acting. By the way, it is a movie, and they're acting like they're locals. Acting, that's what actors do. They act. This is a film starring Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone. And a host of others, from Alec Baldwin to
Bill Murray
and the like. This is Cameron Crowe's latest. And so after seeing it, Professor Barry, with all of the vitriol and all of the cultural appropriation that was attached to the film, undeservedly so in my opinion, what did you think of Aloha?
The problems, the movie has two very big problems. I like the film, to cut to the chase, but there are two very big problems with this movie. First and foremost, it's clearly been cut down from a much longer film.
Cameron Crowe, I mean, what do you expect?
Well, you know, I think what happened was, I think the studio said, you know, we saw Elizabethtown, you had 2.5 hours there, we're not going to give you 2.5 hours. So, because this is a similar film. I mean, it's a multi-character comedy. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of subplots going on.
Right, right.
But unfortunately, it does hurt the film at times, to the point where there's two scenes in particular I won't describe. I'll describe one of them. There's a dance sequence between Emma Stone and Bill Murray. It's a funny scene. But after a while, there's little details that don't add up. Like, all of a sudden, Bill Murray is wearing this Hawaiian headdress, and all of a sudden, there's people in the background that weren't there before. Like, clearly, the scene has been severely cut from a longer sequence. And you can tell. And there's a couple other moments in the film that are like that, where you go, oh, there's stuff that was cut out of this movie for the pace. And I understand that, but at the same time, I welcome a director's cut, because this is a very good film. The screenplay is good, like most Cameron Crowe films. The dialogue has a real whimsical quality to it, and oftentimes the dialogue is very clever and fun. A bit stoner, but fun. And
Cameron Crowe.
It is Cameron Crowe. The other problem with the film, and for me this is the big one, and it's the reason, it was one of the many aspects of controversy that hit this film, and I think it's the only aspect of controversy that's merited. Emma Stone is miscast. She's been cast as someone who is part Chinese, and as her character constantly is reminding us, she's part Hawaiian. Look, on the one hand, Crowe is making a comment about Hawaii's mixed white culture, how there is a real mixture of ethnicities going on here. There are people with, you know, I mean, most of the people I know who grew up here, they've got, you know, 5 or 6 different ethnicities within the background, which is fine. With Emma Stone, it's distracting because her character was clearly written for an Asian American actress. And it just would have made the character go down easier if she was an exotic and beautiful local girl and not Emma Stone, this big comic movie star.
But then again, can I make an argument?
Of course.
We don't know where the chromosomes go, okay? We don't know that. Listen, this may be the Nerd Watch and maybe our show, and I hate to bring myself into the show, but I don't exactly look like a minority, do I? The silence is deafening.
Well, I'm letting you make your point. You're making your point.
My point is this.
You don't, right?
I don't.
Right.
But I am. I am half a minority. I look like I've said before on the show, I look like a guy who could more or less be some kid from Southern California, which I kind of am, honestly, but I'm not. I look as white as they get. Like I said last week, I'm the guy that looks like the guy that stole Urina. That's me. All right? But I'm also a minority. So I don't take offense. I don't take offense because the only people that are real men don't get offended. I'm not offended. But what I am is I'm disappointed that we are now so full of cultural appropriation that we cannot look past what somebody looks like. Yeah, that kind of bums me out. Like, I thought we were supposed to be all past this. Remember, you know, Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, you judge folks on the content of the character, not the color of their skin.
Right.
So, you know, I've seen Asian fathers and European white mothers, and the pool is more white than Asian. It's more dominant gene, and therefore they don't look Asian. So I don't know. I find it hard, especially in my case, being someone who is, and being someone, by the way, not to make this as personal as it gets, but being someone who has been on the other end of the racist stick, and me being the guy who is being berated for my ethnicity and being on the other end of the racism, for me, it's hard for me to get upset or ticked off about it. That's like I said, that's just me. So I think we're doing too much cultural appropriation. I think Hawaiians, you know, we don't have, it's hard to find a pure Hawaiian anymore. It's hard to find pure Chinese. Guarantee you, 100, I would say that 98% of most Hawaiians are, it's always what? Hawaiian Chinese. Or it's Filipino, Hawaiian Chinese. I don't know. Is it hard to believe Emma Stone could be Asian and Haole and Hawaiian? I don't know. Do you find that? Is it impossible? Could you get past that? I mean, watching the movie, is there something you could have done to get past that?
I would have cast somebody else.
Is that of course?
Honestly, no. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. I agree. We're making too much of a big deal of this. I just think there are some cases where I think the movie really could have helped itself, sure, by casting someone who is not a big celebrity, who is an easy fit for the role. There's other examples, and I don't want to give other
for sure
to bunny trail this, but. But I just feel like in this case, for one thing, it's not one of her great performances. She's trying a little too hard. She's also playing somebody who is an Air Force. She is an Air Force pilot.
Sure.
And she's not only absurdly plucky, but she's also playing somebody, you know, who has got, you know, this strict military background. And she seems to be straining for the role. So not only did I not really buy her as somebody, you know, who
seems to keep reaching for, is what you're saying.
I think so. She has a nice chemistry with Bradley Cooper, no question.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I could never lose myself to the character, because the character is so closely associated with her Hawaiian background, with the fact that she's a local girl, and there's just nothing about Emma Stone that really comes across that way. And I think it would have been nice to see someone who, you know, to be completely stereotypical, fine, to be someone who I think we go, okay, she is clearly a local girl, clearly a girl who grew up here, as opposed to Emma Stone, who sounds like she's struggling to get all the Hawaiian words right at times.
Sure. I can find myself getting lost in Emma Stone, or she could find herself getting lost in me, probably more appropriately. So I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't know. I think you're right. If you had gotten a local girl, for sure, somebody who has the darker skin tone.
Well, just even dark hair. I mean, like, when I, you know, the local girls I've known who, you know, would for authenticity's sake or accuracy's sake, I would call Hawaiian girls. I would not think of this girl. And she's standing in. Basically, she is embodying the aloha. She is standing, sure, in for the aina. And it's Emma Stone. And, you know, and I say that respectfully. She's a great actress. She's very funny. This is not one of her great performances. I don't feel like – I just feel like there has to have been somebody else that could have cast for this part.
Can I ask you, so that I can give you a bit of reference, because obviously you know what I'm talking about. But anyway – I'm peeking further down the show, because I'm going to talk about this story a little later, and I posted it on the Nerdwatch, facebook.com/thenerdwatch. I posted that Dwayne Johnson is in talks to be Jack Burton. Should I be offended as a part white guy that I have a darker-skinned brown guy playing Jack Burton, who Kurt Russell is, and he's a European guy? Should I be upset about that? That it's going to The Rock, who's a Polynesian and an African American guy? Should I be upset about that?
No,
exactly.
Not at all.
No, of course not. So I don't. Like I said, maybe I'm not getting it, but I think that now in this day and age, not to get too political about it, I find that now instead of us being a melting pot, What everybody's conveniently doing now is they're resegregating themselves into their own groups, and it's becoming a sad fact of life now. It's becoming sad. I find it, instead of being all inclusive, everybody wants to go back and resegregate into their own little, not even families, but their own personal racial groups, and that's not good, man. I don't think that's good at all. And I find that it happens in the mainland. Look at all the things that are happening in the mainland, and all in the lower income communities and things of that nature. And there's a lot of it's white cops versus, you know, black hooligans, and you know that whole that kind of political, you know, touchstone, as it were, at this point. So I don't know. I don't think I should be mad at those things. I don't think I should be mad that would I like to see The Rock play Jack Burton? First of all, no race involved at all. No, because Kurt Russell is the best Jack Burton ever, and there is only one Jack Burton, and that movie should never be remade. Ever. Ever. Anyway.
Well, you're talking about two different things. You're talking about sociopolitical issues.
Right.
And that is a very different thing. With movies, I mean, I'll just give some quick examples. I mean, I think it's a case-by-case situation.
Sure.
When Zhang Ziyi played a Japanese... Zhang Ziyi is
and
not
she's
Japanese.
Chinese.
She's Chinese, and she was the star of Memoirs for a Geisha. I think she got away with it because her performance was lovely, and it's a beautiful film. But there are very few Japanese actors in that film, despite the fact that the story takes place in Japan. It's about a very Japanese experience.
But do you see Asians getting rising up and getting ticked off?
They should have.
It bothered me.
Well, I mean, shouldn't you know? On the one hand, I want to give actors the benefit of the doubt. When Jonathan Pryce very famously played a Vietnamese character in Miss Saigon on Broadway, there were people that picketed the theater.
Oh, that is true. I remember that was a while ago. I remember that.
That was 1990. Yeah, and he ended up winning the Tony Award for that performance. Mm-hmm. And it was one of these things like, well, should an actor be able to play whoever the heck they want to play? And I think to a degree that is correct. On the other hand, I think there are some cases where it's like, is this person the right person to play that role? Sir Anthony Hopkins played an African American in a movie called The Human Stain.
Yes.
I found it very hard to believe.
I remember seeing that movie, and I didn't. Also, give you another example, which is another good example, and it's a lot. It's the only negative Asian example that I can give you for the time. Blake Edwards' depiction of in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah.
Mickey Rooney. Playing the Japanese gentleman who lived upstairs from Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
So that was, of course, after World War II, and there was a lot of it was the goofy Asian with the buck teeth and all this other stuff.
Yes.
It was very offensive at the time. And that's the only one that I can truly give you that I can see that could be offensive, but in a sense it was cartoony. But wasn't that the whole point of the role?
Well, that's kind of where we were at the time. There was a real insensitivity there. It's like, either if it was an Asian character, you're either talking about Charlie Chan or somebody who is this wacky Asian, which is where we were at that point in time.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of, Charlie Chan was not a Chinese guy in history. He's a local guy. He's from here. He's Hawaiian. As a matter of fact, he was from Honolulu. That's who Charlie Chan is based on, if I have my history correct. He's based on a local guy that worked at the Honolulu Police Department or was a detective, and he's based off of that. So that's there's another one. By the way, I love Charlie Chan movies. Sidney Toler's my favorite, I think.
Nice.
He's my favorite Charlie Chan. Anyway, moving on. So anyway, getting back to the point, let's stop talking about politics and cultural appropriation, because once again, that's a whole new podcast for me. That's Political Watch, because I can totally talk about that all day. But getting back to the movie, the fact that it was hard for you to get past Emma Stone, is there anything redeeming in the film as far as the connection between Emma Stone and Bradley Cooper, and or between Bradley Cooper and Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams, yeah.
Is there anything redeeming in the supporting cast? Is there anything redeeming? Is this something that we should be seeing in the theater?
I think it is, and I hate that this movie has just been swarmed in controversy before it came out, and I don't think almost none of it. Honestly, I'm one of these people that really feels like Emma Stone is miscast here, but other than that, and like I said, I think the editing is a bit choppy at times, I like this film a lot. There's a lot of things to savor. Bill Murray is playing this evil billionaire, but he's playing it in such an eccentric way. It's one of these things like the casting is perfect because you love the character and you're fascinated by him despite the fact that he's kind of a wicked guy. Bill Murray makes the character interesting and fascinating. His scenes are fun. The whole subplot with Rachel McAdams and John Krasinski is golden. The movie handles that so well. It's the smartest, the most heartfelt part of the movie. I won't even begin to describe it, but the final scene of the movie is beautiful. The final scene of the movie is so good. In terms of Cameron Crowe, it's up there with You Had Me at Hello. It's up there with Lloyd Dobler holding up the boombox. It's like one of the great Cameron Crowe scenes. The whole movie's been building towards the last scene of the film, which is so good. It kind of like makes the whole thing work as a whole. There's so many beautiful scenes in this movie, so many funny scenes and clever scenes. There's also stuff that doesn't work, and I think partly because I think Cameron Crowe is trying to kind of bite off more than he can chew. There's a lot of characters, a lot of subplots here. There's also aspects of Hawaiian spirituality, Hawaiian cultural life. There's a whole subplot about Hawaiian sovereignty, which I found refreshing to see in a mainstream movie. There's a lot going on.
No, not the sovereignty movement.
The sovereignty movie. It is, and it has, and it's given time, and it's given a real mouthpiece. And you know what? I found that refreshing to actually
really?
I did. Wow. Because, look, a lot of, if not most people on the mainland, just to completely generalize, most people on the mainland are not familiar with it. They don't know what's going on over here. They don't care. They come out here for Hawaiian Playground. They come out here for the tourist experience. They don't know. They don't care what's going on outside of their hotel suites, to generalize. And I think it's valuable that this movie addresses that. It addresses a lot of the different things that are going on in modern-day Hawaii. The protests, the political movements. This movie, I really feel like, captures, in a sense, more about what's going on out here than a lot of movies about modern-day Hawaii. Mm. So I think it's a valuable film in that way. I think it's a funny movie. It's a very sweet film. It's not perfect, unfortunately. Whereas Elizabethtown was too long, this one's too short. I think it's a winner. I really do. I like this film.
All right. Where would you put it? On a scale of 1 to 5 lays, how many lays would you give it?
I would give it 4 lays.
Wow. What kind of lays? Okay, wait. No. Let me take this back.
Say plumeria.
Plumeria or pikaki? Pikaki, that's
I'm going to go with plumeria.
Oh, okay. Plumeria. Okay. Yeah. All right. Was that too cultural appropriate right there? Was that cultural appropriate or not?
I think you're being culturally sensitive and appropriate.
Okay, just checking.
Was I? Are you offended by the fact that I didn't think that Emma Stone was right for this?
No, I'm not offended at all about that.
I think it's a film by film case. I don't think right. I'm not always saying like an African American has to play an African American as someone who's Chinese. I do think there are examples like Cloud Atlas.
Robert Downey Jr. Played a black man in Tropic Thunder and did it brilliantly.
We played an Australian playing a black man.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. All I'm saying is this, is that I am worried less about who plays the person. I'm not offended because, like I said, everybody, we walk around now, we walk around this haze of wanting to be offended. It's as if we have this little thing in our ear that's just waiting to be offended by someone's comment. I think we have become such pusses, okay? We should stop being so damn offended about everything. It really, that's what I find so, those are the things that I find wrong with where we are at in the state of the nation as we speak.
Sure.
I think everybody gets so offended about everything. No one can, and everybody's afraid to say it. It's so funny that I say it that this way. Remember the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones? Remember that? Now that saying is, at least for me, it's now sticks and stones may break my bones, but words are going to kill me. That's how it feels nowadays. It feels that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words are going to kill me, literally. And that's all we ever hear about. Somebody said this about this and it wasn't appropriate. Somebody said this, or somebody berated this person. I think what's happening now is that once we become people that are so offended by words, what happens to speech? And I think that is I hate using this word, but I'm going to use it anyway. That's a slippery slope. When somebody tells me I can't say something, or someone can't say something that I find offensive, then I think that's a problem. Listen, I think Bill Maher. I don't like Bill Maher. I don't think he's a good. I don't think he's a good comedian. I don't like him as a comedian. I don't like some of the jokes he says about certain issues and comments. But I don't think he should stop doing that just because I don't like it. He should be able to say those things. That's what he should do. That's his right to say whatever he wants, and people find him funny. I don't. That doesn't mean he should stop doing it because I don't like it. That's not how this nation works. So I think people are just, unfortunately, words are becoming so, it's not even about actions anymore. It's about what you say and not what you do. And that, for me, is where this lies. Even in this conversation about aloha, we say that this woman is Hawaiian. Oh, she can't be Hawaiian. Emma Stone. Oh, she can't be Hawaiian. Oh, she can't be Chinese. Why not? She's just playing. She's an actor. She's playing a role. That's what she's doing. She's getting paid to do that. So yes, would it go down easier? Sure. If it was someone else, a local girl, sure. But like I said, she's playing a role. That's what she was hired to do. So I don't know. I'm just over being offended for being offended's sake. That's all. So don't get me.
We're getting offended over the wrong things, though. This movie ended up on the cover of the Maui News talking about the protests for this movie.
Why?
And it's like, I mean, you know, nobody batted. Well, not nobody. There are a few people, but almost nobody batted an eye over the Skids and Mudflap characters from the second Transformers, which were just hideous, hideous, hideous caricatures. Those movies were huge successes. The fact that Aloha is met with so much controversy, has hurt it.
Can I give you an example, though? I think, and I'll be honest with you, those caricatures in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen were caricatures of supposedly urban or African-American rappers and or what have you. I find it, but isn't, in all honesty, isn't Snoop Dogg a character? Isn't Dr. Dre a character? Ice Cube? Isn't he a character? I mean, aren't those characters of the real person? So therefore, when you have exaggerations like guys like, I can't believe I'm pulling guys like out like this, like guys like Little John, is he not offensive? Can somebody not play that part and not be offensive? Does he have, Little John is a caricature of what a black rapper is, right? He is the stereotypical big chains, big gold goblet, gold teeth, whatever, right? He's got that whole thing. So now when someone makes fun of it or someone makes light of it, why is it offensive? He's doing it to himself. So when somebody makes light of it, as a robot even, why are we getting offended? It's a robot. It's not even a guy. These are things that don't make any sense to me. These are things that I find like people are getting offended for being offended's sake. And I think that's the wrong way to be nowadays. I don't know. Like I said, I can't tell people how to live. That's not my live and let live. Listen, that's you. If you want to be offended every day and worry about what somebody's going to say on Twitter or Facebook, hey, have at it. Go have fun. I don't know how you avoid being depressed for the rest of your life. Stop worrying about things that people say. Worry about yourself. You know, worry about, you know, I understand there are things that people say that people find offensive. But, you know, that's kind of I don't know how to explain it more eloquently than I just wish that people would realize that being offended with every little thing, nothing becomes offensive. Or when you become offended with every little thing, nothing means anything anymore. That's where I'm at. So, you know, Emma Stone, that's why I raise a big ruckus when somebody says Emma Stone can't be a Hawaiian. Why not? Because she doesn't look like one? I don't look like a Filipino guy, do I? And I'm half. I don't look like a Filipino guy at all. So, you know, I don't mind not being recognized as a Filipino guy. That's fine. You don't have to. I don't need to culturally be appropriated for my race. I'm not just white. I'm not white. I'm Scottish. I'm Irish. I'm English. And I'm also half Filipino. That's so, you know, and I look like I belong in Scotland. That's my thing. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm pontificating when I said I wouldn't want to. But anyway, that's where I'm at with this.
So if I was in a movie and I said that I was like half Hawaiian, you wouldn't have any problem with that? You wouldn't question it? You wouldn't go, you know, couldn't they have cast some guy who actually looks Hawaiian as opposed to this guy who looks like he's never been in the sun before?
I would say that it has to do with, number one, first of all, I think it has to do with box office draw and talent. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's Hawaiian or not. I think that has nothing to, with anything. Doesn't, I mean, when we watch older films, say like Lawrence of Arabia, I guarantee you that there are a lot of guys who are playing Arabians that weren't Arabian.
Of course.
You know, I mean, so that pretty much goes without saying. I think we're just doing too much of the issue where that we're resegregating ourselves into our own little cultural familiarities, and I don't think we should be doing that. All I'm saying is, do I understand the offensive? A little bit. I just don't understand that we're watching a movie. You know, this is a movie.
In this case, it's not worth getting
right. Up in it's arms not worth about. Getting up. It's not worth getting up in arms about. You know, this is the choice that the director's made. That's how he's made it. And hey, listen, if you think you can do a better job and make a better movie, then you make a culturally appropriate movie for Hawaii that you think would be that you think it should be made. Then do it. You know. Until then, you know, I think that maybe the criticism should be less as far as the appropriateness of it, and review the movie, like it or don't. That's how I look at it. So, anyway, Professor Barry, I think you've worn me out, man.
I think so. I'm all winded.
I'm a little winded. I'm a little winded. I'm just afraid that when speech becomes a problem, speech is the one that and that's the guaranteed right of all people, the freedom of speech. And it doesn't freedom of speech doesn't cover speech that we like. It covers speech that we don't necessarily agree with. That's the whole point of freedom of speech. That's where I'm at with this. And this is just this was an expression of what they that she might be. So anyway, moving on.
We're good, man. We're like Christian Slater and Pump Up the Volume. We're saying whatever we want. People out there are listening. Right. We're good so
this
far.
This is Pirate Radio, baby. That's right, man. This is what this is. moving on to something that I don't think any Polynesian would get offended by.
Not a single one.
The Rock playing a white guy in California in San Andreas. No?
I don't know if it was ever established. His name is Ray. I don't even think he had a last name. Because I think about, I don't remember anybody in the in credits even having a last name.
Ray? So. I don't believe it.
Just Ray.
Ray? You mean he's Samoan and he doesn't have a Samoan name in the movie? What is wrong with this? Tell me how horrible and culturally appropriate this movie is, honestly.
Oh, I dug San Andreas so much. And here's the thing that I think is key why the movie is so good. I'll just briefly, without spoiling anything, just mentioning what the opening scene is about. It opens with this young, and I'm just going to say it because the movie presents it as such, a young, dumb, blonde driving on a hillside, texting and driving at the same time. It's one of these hillsides without any kind of guardrails.
Anybody, any actor we know?
No, oh, no, okay. I don't believe so. And she's clearly in a great deal of danger. She doesn't even realize, like, she's texting and driving. She's, like, almost driving off a cliff. She finally does drive off a cliff. And we see her go down off the cliff in slow motion. Now, if this were a serious movie, we'd be going, oh, my God, the tragedy. But really, we are invited to cheer and smile and chuckle as we're watching her in slow motion go, ah, and it's great. Her car lands on one of those side pockets of a cliff that only happen in the movies where there's like a branch holding her car. And who comes to rescue her in a helicopter but none other than our star Dwayne Johnson. And initially we don't see him. There's a reporter in the back of the helicopter. It's a helicopter full of professional rescuers. He is in
I thought you were going to say professional wrestlers.
No, that would have been awesome.
That
would have been amazing. But so anyway, like the helicopter is going to this girl's rescue. It's been called in that this girl in this car is on the side of this cliff. And she's interviewing all the guys on the rescue helicopter. Dwayne Johnson's back is to us, but we know it's him because he hasn't been introduced yet. And she goes, well, sir, what about you? What do you have to say about your job? And Dwayne Johnson turns around to the camera.
Slow-mo?
No, but I swear to God, he does a little bit of the people's eyebrow. And he says, ma'am, it's what we do. That's his opening line in the movie.
Oh, I gotta
it's
watch
like,
this already.
This movie knows it's a movie. And that's why it's so much fun. Because 2012, for one thing, that movie was at least 40 minutes too long. San Andreas is shorter, it's more fun, and it doesn't take itself remotely serious. There's so much carnage and destruction. There's so many buildings and miles of real estate that's destroyed.
Right.
And we're really not supposed to have any kind of emotional attachment to it. This movie knows it's a movie. Paul Giamatti and Dwayne Johnson are constantly winking at the audience, basically letting us know, look.
Does it feel like an Irwin Allen movie?
Yes, it definitely feels, I mean, it's like there's a little bit of Earthquake, there's a little bit of The Perfect Storm, there's even a little bit of Titanic, there's a little bit of Deep Impact. I mean, it's
Towering Inferno?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's cribbed from a lot of disaster movies, and it works just fine. It's so stupid and so fun and so thrilling. It's not an actor's movie, but the actress who plays Dwayne Johnson's daughter, her name is Alexandra, Daddario. She's sensational. She'll probably have a big role after this because she steals the whole movie. Carla Gugino is wonderful. Paul Giamatti is great as always. This movie is
so much fun. I haven't
seen
him in a while.
Yeah.
Nothing big other than, right. I mean, the last thing we saw him big in was his bit part in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
You're right. Yeah, so. And he's much better here than he was as a
horribly miscast Russian?
Yes. Yeah. What was the name of the character? The
Alika? What's the name of Rhino?
Rhino! That's what I was trying to think, yeah.
What's his name? What's his Russian name? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Oh man, I don't remember either.
Just lost my comic book cred a second ago.
I know, right?
Man. Anyway, this movie is so much fun. Definitely see this on the big screen. It's meant to be seen on the big screen. And the audience I saw was just eating it up. San Andreas is fun. It's a nice surprise because I can't say that I was expecting it to be great or even good from the trailers.
Brad Payton is he's the guy who did Journey 2 with The Rock.
Which was fun. This is a better film. I mean, I didn't think this movie was going to be a summer movie contender, but it really is.
Fantastic.
The special effects are incredible.
So, is that I'm guessing that's where the money is.
Yeah, no question. I mean, they definitely didn't spend it on the screenplay, which is beyond corny. I mean, my other favorite line, which I'll somewhat spoil.
No, ruin it. Go ahead.
I will. There's a scene in the movie, for reasons that are far too complex to explain, where Dwayne Johnson and Carla Gugino jump out of a plane in tandem together. They land in a baseball field. They land on the plate. And as soon as they touch ground, Dwayne Johnson turns to Carla Gugino and goes, "I always wanted to get you to second base." Again, folks, it's that kind
that
of movie.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Awesome. You know what's funny is that this is exactly who we thought Dwayne Johnson was going to be when he got out of wrestling.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, he did just that with The Rundown. But he also took turns. He also took some interesting turns with not Get Shorty, but its sequel.
Be Cool. Yeah.
He took chances with a movie called Faster, which was not what I expected.
That's my favorite that he's done. He's so soulful in that movie. I'd say the same thing about Southland Tales. That was a weird film and gave a very weird performance, but he was wonderful in that film.
And I think that really shows something about, as much as I didn't enjoy a lot of those movies, it shows something about the craft that he's trying to get better at.
Yeah.
And so now when he comes aboard and he does these big movies, like, he doesn't want, how can I put this? He doesn't want to be the next Steven Seagal. He doesn't want to be the next, he doesn't even want to be the next Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wants to be above that. He wants to be something better than that. That's how I look at it. And I think that he wants somebody to aspire to be who he is on the big screen is what I'm guessing.
Sure.
Oh, I want to be like Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for him. I mean, he's taken the time to learn the craft and be fun to watch on screen, which he is. He's extremely fun to watch on screen. He has mass appeal. He does.
Yes.
Women like him. Men like him as well. Women love him. Men want to be his best friend kind of thing. It's what he's got going for him. With that in mind, Professor Barry, how many San Andreas fault lines does this film get?
Well, let's see. I mean, there's a lot in the movie, but I'm trying to think, like, in terms of the rating scale.
Right. On your let's even break it down. On Professor Barry's Richter scale, which no longer exists anymore. On your Richter scale, on your Rock Richter scale, where does this go?
I can't think of anything I really didn't like about it because, as I said, from the very beginning, this movie is letting you know, look, if you're looking for gritty realism, leave right now.
Of course.
This is not that movie.
Of course.
So I'd say, I don't want to give it like a top rating because it is such a cheesy junk movie.
Oh, stop it! Come on, give it something good.
But it's fun. I'll give it on a scale of 1 to 10. I'll give it a 9. It deserves it.
Wow.
It's fun.
On the Richter scale and on the star scale, where would you put it?
Star a 3.
3. Okay.
It's a freaking fun movie, and I would happily see it again. I really feel. I mean, like Aloha is a flawed movie, but I think it's a good, very, very good movie, and its best scenes are great. Even
that I can't wait for though.
I don't know. I'd see that one again too. I thought that was a very good movie. But San Andreas, considering what its achievement is and what it succeeds at doing and the kind of film that it is, it's a great movie. It really is. I think it's better than Deep Impact. I think it's better than 2012. It's definitely better than the original Earthquake. But it's a movie that's paying homage to all those movies, and it's so much fun. And as you said, like, The Rock has wide appeal, and I think this movie will have wide appeal because I think there's something in it for everyone. It's very intense at times, but I don't think it's so traumatic that you can't take, like, a young person to see it. And a young person,
right,
I think, will enjoy it.
I think that is the only reason why I am not completely up in arms about the whole Big Trouble in Little China, the whole Big Trouble in Little China news that's happening about The Rock being talked or being cast as Jack Burton. I should say in talks to be cast as Jack Burton.
Right.
And if he is, he does have that mass appeal, number one. And number two, he can be very funny.
Hilarious.
And he can be, and I think he may be able to pull off the role. I just, you know, Kurt Russell, that's that's Jack Burton.
Jack Burton needs to be played. I mean, the thing is, like, I agree with you. I don't think there needs to be a remake. Nope. I don't even like to think about that. But if they're going to do it, it needs to be played by somebody special. And Dwayne Johnson is somebody special. He is the equivalent of what Kurt Russell was. Kurt Russell was somebody who people grew up with him. People knew him. People knew him from all sorts of different movies. And we're getting to that point with Dwayne Johnson. He's got different audience demographics, but everybody knows who he is. So if they're going to put anybody in that role, somebody who has presence and comic finesse, and not to mention the physical presence as well as the ability to do all of his action, I mean, he's the guy.
Yeah, you know, the only argument that I can make, though, is that Jack Burton, Kurt Russell, and I mean this as a compliment.
He's not the hero of the movie. Yeah,
he's not even larger than life.
Right.
But the actions that surround him and the things that he does make him larger than life. Like in the movie The Big Trouble in Little China, he does things that he has to do, not necessarily things he wants to do.
Right.
And the thing is that I see The Rock as a hero. You know what I mean? So I don't.
But he can play dumb really well.
Okay, that is true.
He's very funny, and I think that's one of the keys to the role is that one of the things that Russell did that's very overlooked because he's brilliant in the film is that Burton is really stupid.
He is.
He's only the hero because he's played by Kurt Russell and because Egg Shen keeps telling us that Jack Burton's a great man or in his dead. But really,
who?
Yeah, but Jack Burton is like he's stupid. He's really, really stupid, and he's really useless in the fight scenes. He's constantly the one getting knocked out, or he's too late, or his gun doesn't work. Burton is really a supporting role in those films, which is one of the charm about it.
The charm of Jack Burton, of course, is the fact that in these times of peril, even though he is a klutz, he believes to be the incarnation of John Wayne.
And that's the thing I love about Burton. Like if anybody wanted to, like, not to get too socio-political about this, but like if anybody, not America, but if anybody can stand in for America, it can be embodied in one man, I'd say it's Jack Burton. That is like this is who America is. This guy is wearing, you know, a tank top with a Chinese print on it, acid wash jeans. He's got a mullet. And, you know, he's talking into his CB to all his buddies out there. Like, this guy is kind of like the...
all in the reflexes.
He's like our redneck hero. But he's also, like, he's really not much of a hero. He's kind of like how we are as Americans. He does a lot of things half-assed. He's kind of lazy. He's talented, but he's also kind of a creep. Even like Gracie Lords doesn't completely like
Gracie
him.
Law, yeah.
Gracie Law, like she, like there's things about him that are like really unappealing, and it's so funny that, I mean, because really the star of the movie is Dennis Dunn. It's his movie. He kicks ass. He saves the day. Burton is kind of like he's the hero because he thinks he's the hero. So
no, you're right, and I mean, like I said, I just the only thing is that I don't see anybody delivering lines like Kurt Russell too. That's, you know, when he goes into the diatribe where I get it's all in the reflexes. He's got Chaw in his mouth and he's on the walkie-talkie and he goes, like I told my last wife, I said, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes. It's like, man, that's awesome. I don't think The Rock could ever say those things. And then what was his famous his famous one that everybody likes to quote all the time. Just remember what old Jack Burton does when the earth quakes, the poison arrows fall from the sky, and the pillars of heaven shake. Yeah, Jack Burton just looks that big old storm right in the eye and says, give me your best shot. I can take it. Right? Right? Come on!
Well, how about if they do what they did with the Shaft remake? How about Jack Burton is still in the story? Jack Burton is like, it's like Uncle Jack, and Dwayne Johnson is either the nephew or the adopted son. They keep it in the family. How about
ooh,
that?
Ooh, okay.
Shaft style.
You
know
that.
The way Richard Roundtree was Uncle Shaft, that. And Sam Jackson was like Shaft Jr., which is fine.
Shaft was a good movie.
Yeah, and I thought that worked. I mean, and I think, you know, Big Trouble was an even better movie than Shaft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're not poo-pooing The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, being Jack Burton.
I think his involvement in some way, in some small way, validates it. When Gerard Butler was announced as the next Snake Plissken, that made me really angry because Butler, I like him, but he does not carry the screen. He cannot hold the screen the way Kurt Russell is. I can't even imagine that, and I don't feel like Butler really has the qualities to make that work. But I think Dwayne Johnson is talented enough to carry the baton of Big Trouble in Little China and the Pork Chop Express. I really do.
Oh, man, the Pork Chop Express. Yeah. Man, I want to go home and watch that now. I love that movie.
Me too.
All right, well, let's hope they do the original justice, and let's hope that Big Trouble in Little China is worth it. And by the way, we always had the classic, so let's just leave it at that. Thank John Carpenter and Kurt Russell for making Big Trouble in Little China when they did, for sure. So, anyway, Professor Barry, before we wrap things up, a couple of things. First off, I want to let everybody know that on the NerdWatch site, there's a couple of interesting articles you may want to read if you haven't caught it. I put up an article about the way John Seale, the director of photography on Mad Max, was told to shoot the movie. They call it being center framed. And that's an amazing 3-minute video. It's on NerdWatch. If you like movies, you have to see this video. It's an amazingly simple technique that George Miller put into place that makes the action come alive in Mad Max Fury Road. You should watch it. It is quite fascinating about camera work and things like that, and I loved it. And then, for all of those out there comic book fans, I want you to know that I also posted a story about that Mark Millar, the comic book guru, as it were, at this time, he is making 2 new movies. And I will only mention one at this time just because last week, or the last time we met up with Gannon here at the Maui Comics and Collectibles, they are looking into making Chrononauts the movie. I am not familiar with the Chrononauts. I've only heard how cool they are. I'm guessing that they're good fodder for the film. Alik, are you familiar with how good the Chrononauts are? Are they good stories? You think it'll make a good movie?
Well, I mean, it just came out.
Yeah. And
it's only a month or 2 old.
So has
it was optioned by Universal before it even hit the stands.
Wow.
Is it that good?
I'm hearing a lot of good things about it.
All right, okay. All right. Chrononauts is making, I guess Mark Millar is, I guess he's writing the script. And
do you have it on your shelf?
It's sold out, so it must be pretty
good. Oh, wow. See, there you go. Wow. My Comics and Collectibles selling out of the Chrononauts. Go figure. Well, that's going to be one of the 2 big movies that is being made at this point that they're putting together. So that'll be cool. I'm very interested. Now I want to read Chrononauts. Come down, pick it up at My Comics and Collectibles when he has it back in, because it's sold out.
I got the current issue.
Oh, you do.
There we go.
I want this.
I
want
the one sold out.
Man, I want the run. I want the run. I want the series, man. I want the run. Anyway, last but not least, for all of our fans that enjoy collectibles, I want you to know that I placed on our site an interesting, cool character that you should definitely take a look at. There is an Iron Man figure that can be put into an Iron Man Hulkbuster suit.
Wow.
Yeah, and cool. It looks really awesome. So you can check that out. It's a Hulkbuster suit that an Iron Man toy actually fits in. So if you're a collector, it looks awesome. I would like it on my shelf. It's a bit pricey.
What's the price? Is it safe?
I don't remember because I don't have it open. But check it out at facebook.com/nerdwatch. You can check that out for sure. And then last but not least on my list of news I wanted to bring up was that we found 2 new people. We found the 2 people that are going to be Rocksteady and Bebop in the new TMNT 2 movie. And I'm going to mention the one that I know of because I'm a wrestling fan, and that is, of course, Sheamus. Sheamus is going to be playing... he's going to be playing... I believe he's playing Rocksteady, if I'm not mistaken. So I hope I got that right. And then... Gary Anthony Williams, that's the other guy. So they're going to be Bebop and Rocksteady. Or maybe he's playing Rocksteady. Maybe that's why his hair looks so dumb in the WWE at this point. Maybe it was for this role. Who knows? So, yeah, I'm interested. I'm a little more interested.
Well, this series, you know, it's nothing but high caliber stuff. You know, Megan Fox, Sheamus, you know, wow.
Listen, it can't get any worse.
Wow.
It cannot. There's no way it can get any worse.
Carrot Top could have a role.
Okay, well, listen, that's not what we're talking about here, but you're right. That could definitely make it worse. Anyway, Professor Barry, also want to let you guys know that we're getting a whole bunch of stuff on video on demand now. It is Tuesday, so of course, we're recording Tuesday, so of course, there's new movies to be had. Want to let you know that now available is SpongeBob SquarePants the movie, or excuse me, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water. Haven't seen it, and I've heard mixed things. McFarlane USA, starring Kevin Costner.
Wanted to see that.
So have I. Jupiter Ascending is now available in hard media as well as Focus.
Oh, boy.
I cannot wait to see that movie, by the way.
Oh, you're in for a treat, let me tell you.
Oh, I cannot wait. By the way, just in case you don't know, Honest Trailers, great site. Honest Trailers is on YouTube. They do great work. They did a one for Jupiter Ascending. And it makes me want to watch the movie more.
Nice.
That's how good it is. Also, I think I mentioned this. I may have mentioned this last week, but Run All Night, starring Liam Neeson, is out on video on demand, as well as Chappie. And Unfinished Business, starring Vince Vaughn. And, yeah, so I've never seen... You saw Chappie and Run All Night, yep. And did you watch Unfinished Business?
I didn't.
You did not? Interesting. And... I think that was pretty much it as far as new releases go. There isn't much in the way of new releases on especially during the summertime. We get garbage, a lot of hot garbage on video pretty much. But it's nice that we get to see stuff now sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
It seems like that that calendar keeps getting pushed back. Like, instead, it used to be 6 months, remember?
Yeah.
Or it used to be a year when Batman. Remember Batman?
Well, Batman was one. Yeah, that changed.
That changed it.
4 months. Because if it came out in June, then it was on video by October.
1989. Like, whoa. And yeah. Everybody had to have a VHS copy of that.
Yep.
And then we went to 6 months. Then we went to 5 months. Then we went to 4 months. And now we're at like 3 months.
Somewhere between 4 and 3. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's insane how fast this stuff comes out. But yeah. In my opinion, it's smart because that way you don't lose the connection to the film.
Yeah.
And so people are more apt to pick up the film. Especially in the day and age where we live, where, you know, pirating is such a big deal, it's much easier to get access to it faster and quicker this way anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, and by the way, Ex Machina, I believe, is also be coming out, I think, next week on VOD as well. We'll talk about that next week, though. But yeah, there's some good stuff out there to be had for sure. So anyway, Professor Barry, I think that about does it for the day. We've done a lot of talking, a lot of pontificating, a lot of discussing the political climate and political appropriateness and cultural appropriateness, as it were.
And movies.
And we even fit in the Constitution. Go figure.
Wow.
A lot of stuff today on the Nerd Watch.
God bless America.
God bless America. I completely and totally agree.
I could certainly give a little bit of filler. Did you want to find a perfect Jack Burton quote to end this episode with? Should we end it on one of our great Americans?
I gave two. And if there is somebody who is a great American, it is Jack Burton.
Truly.
You know, it's tough. And I have to say, I think... for next time, let's put it this way. In the words of the wonderfully awesome Jack Burton, until next week, ladies and gentlemen, sit tight, hold the fort, keep the home fires burning, and if we're not back by dawn, call the president. So...
Nice.
I think that duly wraps it up.
Well done.
Next week, hopefully we'll talk... Entourage, maybe.
Maybe.
You're going to be watching Insidious, Chapter 3.
Definitely seen. Can't wait to see it.
And then you also have... Do you have Spy on your radar at
all? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Spy's on the radar as well. And then, of course, next week as well is Jurassic World. And we are hoping to at least... If we meet, I believe we'll meet on Tuesday, and then we'll do another pod, obviously, and then we'll do a special pod for Jurassic World. I think we have to, and and be able to get the word out as quickly as possible about Jurassic World, because I think that's going to be one another sleeper hit of the summer. Who knew that San Andreas was going to be such a huge hit?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious me. It's a huge hit right now. So, and The Rock celebrated by washing his car. I don't know if you saw his Instagram post.
No.
I don't follow him or anything. I don't. What's Instagram? I have no idea. Anyway, yeah. So we'll watch Jurassic World. I am very excited to see Chris Pratt in the film. I'm very excited to see him whisper to raptors and make them obey, which is awesome. I cannot wait to see that for sure. A lot of stuff coming up. I want to talk about that. We are going to do another commentary. We don't know what yet. I think we have decided that you and I have to get in the Twilight Zone movie for sure. And then we've got a couple other fun ones coming out that we're going to have a bunch of guests on as well, which will be a lot of fun. Next week, format should be back, and we should have a lot more to talk about. There's going to be a ton to talk about. Make sure to check us out at facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. Professor Barry puts up his reviews. I put up my reviews. He puts up stories about what he thinks relevant to, of course, The Nerd Watch, as well as I do, and so does Format. So make sure you guys check that out as well, please, by all means. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at NerdWatchNation. And isn't there one more place? Instagram. Instagram, the_NerdWatch. That would be us. That's one where you follow us and then you wait for pictures that rarely come. That's the Instagram. That's how horribly bad I am at social media. I'm so sorry. I'm just bad at it. I'm trying. Listen, I'm learning social media. I don't know how kids pick it up so fast. I don't get it. It's crazy. So good luck.
I'm with you, man. I mean, I'm glad I can still use a calculator to spell boob lips upside down, you know? It's okay.
All right, because you have to spell it backwards, don't you?
That's right, right. What was it, 773-8008? Yeah. It took me years of junior high to learn that.
Wow. That is quite an accomplishment, sir, for someone who has graduated from college and now is a professor. If that could possibly be your greatest accomplishment.
Oh, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I found a title for this show.
Oh.
Oh, yes. You know what it's going to be called?
What is it called?
It's going to be called Aloha No. Aloha, comma, no.
Oh, that sounds like a negative connotation or like absolutely. An instant bad review.
No. Well, no. Well, it kind of does, but I think it has to do with more of the talk that we had today because we got so deep into the conversation of Aloha. By the way, aloha does mean more than just hello and goodbye. It also means mercy and grace and, you know, things of that nature. So,
and a film directed by Cameron Crowe.
I want to see you guys back here next time for another rousing edition of The Nerd Watch. Please come and visit Maui Comics and Collectibles here at
333 Akaku.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Professor Barry. For all of your comic book and action figure and retro gaming needs, please come down if you live on the island of Maui. Check them out. Also, check them out on Facebook. Facebook.com/Maui Comics and Collectibles. They're there as well. So please come and visit and pick up Chrononauts when he's got it in. You have to. I want it now. I want a copy of that so I can take a look at it now. I got to see what that's all about. All right, we're out of time, boys and girls. So peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, we say to you, aloha. No. Is that all right? It should be fine.
Oh.
Okay, good.